Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. I have Will Wild from Football Form Labs on the show this week, and he's going to give us his take on form analysis from a football perspective and also money management. So let's have a chat with Will. G'day, Will. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
Yeah, really well, thanks. I haven't had you on the show before, so maybe you can just give the listeners a brief rundown on your background.
Sure, yeah. I am the head trader for Football Form Labs. Football Form Labs is betting software to help people bet on soccer. We're based in the UK, but we cover leagues all around the world. And we run our own strategies. We let users create their own strategies in the software and also give them advice on how to become a better punter through editorial output, which can be as simple as a recommendation in, I don't know, we've got Champions League football on tonight, or it can be a lot further in depth of how markets are formed and how people bet.
And so has some of that come about from your maths background? I believe you did a maths degree.
Yeah, so I studied maths. It's heavily data-driven. But we also like to present it in a format where we can give users the tools to make their own decisions on data, so it's not going to be as simple as saying this has happened in the past and this will happen in the future. We'll drill down further into the statistics and see, try and work out which ones are relevant to an upcoming fixture or other sporting events. So currently we're covering a lot for the Rugby World Cup, obviously a huge game at the weekend, but with the same tactics that we use to analyse football matches, we delve into other sports, predominantly rugby, tennis, cricket, golf, NFL, baseball. So we cover a large range of sports where we can get a comprehensive database of past results and use that to try and predict what's going to happen in the future and make some money.
Fair enough, that's the plan. So we've run a podcast series the last few weeks with some fairly standard questions amongst Australian racing and harness punters. This one will be a little bit different in that I'll just only ask the ones that are more so relevant to the work that you do. And the first one's probably an obvious answer in that we've been chatting to people about whether they're more data-driven or gut instinct and experience, and it sounds like you're heavily focused on the data.
We are massively focused on data, but I think a key thing is to have experience of markets as well. I think most good gut instinct comes from a lot of practice in the markets, and I think it's probably a bit harsh to call it gut instinct. You know, it's taken years of practice to get that good to know when a price is wrong. So I think even gut instinct is driven by data, even though maybe people aren't aware of it at the time, that data that they've accumulated, even if they're not actually tracking, you know, even if they're not keeping records all of the time. We use a data-driven approach. We try and look at trends in the past that will be reproduced in the future. And maybe if they won't be reproduced in the future, if there's a reason a team may change their behaviour. A lot of time in football, just the introduction of a new coach can massively change the way a team plays. Over here we've got a team called West Brom in the Premier League. They're now managed by Tony Pulis, who's done some remarkable things at other clubs, keeping them up in the league, but he doesn't play a brand of exciting attacking football, and because of that a lot of his games tend to be pretty dull affairs. He actually was involved in a 3-2 thriller on Monday, but apart from that, most of his games are pretty dull, whereas before he took over at West Brom, they were a very pleasing team on the eye with more goals in their games, but maybe less effective, whereas under him, they should stay up comfortably, which is the goal, really.
Yeah, and how do you find trends in the data that's likely to continue? Because there are some, I suppose, untrained people that would, you know, look at very recent performances and probably small sample sizes, and there's backfitting and all that type of stuff. How do you avoid any of those pitfalls?
Yeah, I think the key really is finding value, right? So how is a market going to be priced up? Is a market going to be priced up based on how well the teams are known. For instance, in the Champions League tonight, we've got Man City playing away at Mönchengladbach. Now, that game looks like it's being priced up as a standard non-Bayern Munich German team at home to the English champions or the English champions elect. Now, anyone watching Man City at the moment will know that they're not playing anything like that level, certainly over the last couple of weeks, mainly because they've got some big injuries in their squad. You know, their key man, David Silva, is injured again tonight, and without him, they lack creativity. So what we'll do, we'll go back and look at the games where David Silva hasn't played for Man City and how have they done without him. That's kind of how we would approach that game and try and model that on against the prices available tonight.
And so you talk about the Champions League there. Do you tend to concentrate on, you know, big games and big markets like that, where I'm sure you can get on for massive volume if you so choose, or are you more looking to cherry pick, you know, smaller leagues and less widely bet games?
I think that's a very good question. I think a good answer to that would be the evolution of a standard bettor. If I was recommending someone to getting into betting now, to really make money from it, you're going to have to beat the most liquid markets in the world. Now, the most liquid markets in the world are priced up by some of the best brains in the world. But that's not to say that value won't exist at some point between the price opening and the price closing, or even in play. And if you can understand why markets are modelled as they are, you can take advantage of the times where they might be wrong, because the price will move up and down in any liquid market, and at some point it's a right, it's a back for someone, at some point it's a lay for someone. So I think if you're disciplined enough to say, okay, I'm going to back Man City tonight at 2.2 should they ever get there, but I'm also going to lay them at 1.8 and have a decent range, you know, at some point there's a good likelihood that bet might get hit. Our strategy is certainly to beat the most liquid markets in the world, the toughest markets, but also the most popular markets. We do that for a few reasons. We're really, some are commercial. You know, a lot of people will be more interested in the Champions League tonight than the League One game last night, you know, that maybe, I don't know, 10,000 people are watching compared to a couple of million maybe that watched Chelsea last night. So I think commercially it makes sense to try and analyse the toughest games. From a professional punting perspective, there's little point in analysing the smaller games because you can't make that much money off of them. At some point, liquidity dries up in the lower leagues, and if you're going to turn this into a job in itself, you know, it's got to pay for itself. And yeah, the only way you can do that is by beating the biggest leagues.
And do you tend to bet early, you know, when markets aren't fully formed, or maybe there's some information in the market that isn't widely known, or do you bet late once, I suppose, all the objective factors are known and you can be pretty confident that there's nothing that's going to spring up, or, you know, no late injuries, weather, anything like that?
Yeah, I think certainly the biggest change is the starting lineup. One problem that gamblers have got is that the market will move once the starting lineup is known, and someone will know the starting lineup before you do. So our approach typically is we use a predictive team lineup method where we have experts in every league that we cover, and they will between 2 and 4 hours before the game give us a predicted lineup based on their expert knowledge and their information from all of the teams in that league. Now, while that's never going to be 100% accurate, what it does let us do, it lets us feed our model, which is a kind of player ratings model, with predicted team lineups, so we can get on before the price moves. We can't get on much before that because there isn't too much liquidity in the, say, more than 4 hours before the start of the game. So that's where we kind of operate at the moment, between 4 and 2 hours before a game. Certainly prices are more wrong the earlier they're available. And the reason for that is that bookmakers, certainly the trend for bookmakers to cover every game and every market within that game, they haven't got the resources to say, okay, we've got to be on the ball searching Twitter every second that Preston North End, say, give a press update that one of their players might be injured. You know, they put those prices up there, but their limits are going to be a lot lower because there's a lot more uncertainty in the market. As soon as the teams are announced, and certainly when the game goes in play, everything changes completely. Liquidity goes up a lot more. markets will follow a similar kind of trend in every match, which will be based on the activity in that game. And I think that's a great time for punters if they have seen something in a game, or they know that teams have maybe a different tendency to the norm in play, that they can get a great opportunity. But for us, we tend to bet between 2 and 4 hours before the match.
Have you found soccer to have more or less betting opportunities because of the low scores? I mean, obviously there's some variance, you know, there when, you know, what's the average score in a game? Maybe 2.5 goals or similar. Does that make it easier?
2.5 goals, and I think it means there's a lot of luck involved. Most models now have certainly high luck kind of dependency. They expect variance in terms of the number of chances and that you convert, really. I think a lot of sports are better to model because there are more points. For instance, tennis, you know, you've got a reference point every minute, whereas at your own football, you're only going to get 2 or 3 a game. And I think I'm surprised that football is so popular as an in-play betting sport because of that. I think before the game, it's and you know, it's an opinion against an opinion, but the nature of a game changes so much in football when a goal is scored, whereas in other sports like NFL, you know, it's until you get very late into the game, the pattern of the game is very similar. Yeah, variance is a huge thing in football, but equally it's a very liquid market. So if you do something, the more you can do something, because there are so many games covered, so many leagues around the world that you can bet on, you can have enough bets in a year to negate that variance. You know, we place 3,000 bets a year, so on one game, yeah, you might get very unlucky, but over the course of the year, you'd hope you wouldn't.
Okay, and what about in-play? You mentioned that there's, you know, it's a very popular option. What percentage of your overall betting volume would be in-play?
I think a very small percentage. One of the reasons for that is that the football models are very efficient now, and the value that I can get pre-match won't necessarily improve in play unless there's something that I'm expecting to happen in play, which if I could predict that there was going to be a goal in the 30th minute for the away team and then I wanted to back the home team, why would I take a pre-match position anyway unless it was backing the home team and expecting them to come in play? So the reason we don't bet a lot of time in play is that if we make something value pre-match, it's very rarely going to be value on the opposing side in play. So it would be a bad bet to hedge any of our positions. And because we're having so many bets a year, we would lose a large chunk of our edge by just greening up and just having a guaranteed profit. I think trading generally as a way to circulate your funds and reuse them and work for a better position in a sport where you might have a lot of positions in one match, so say a 2020 cricket match, it makes perfect sense. You're going to have a lot of entry and exit points. But in football, because as you mentioned, with the lack of goals, it's very rare that your opinion is going to change if you're betting on a model. The model's always going to say that a home team of value, whether they're 3-0 up, whether they're 3-0 down, whatever the market is, it's going to be wrong by a similar amount that it was wrong at the start, unless there's been something in play to massively change your opinion. So I'd say a very small percentage and more. A lot of the in play bets will say, I think the, because models are so efficient in football and liquidity is so large, you can always use an opinion-based approach rather than a model-based approach in play, because the market isn't that wrong in the first place. You know, you're betting against an efficient market, so if you think you've got a small edge, why not take it in play?
So in terms of the staking and the money management, how do you determine what percentage of your bank to bet, and also is that influenced by the size of the overlay? Is there any aspect of the Kelly criterion involved?
Certainly is. I think the more value you've got, the more you should stake, for sure. I mean, Kelly is based on knowing the chance of every outcome available, which in sport is impossible to get. So I think a certainly limited Kelly staking system is the best approach. We bet actually solely on the Asian handicap, Racing Handicap, for any listeners that aren't aware, is a way of turning a football market from a three-way market, which includes a win, draw and loss, into a two-way market, where one team is given a number of goals advantage at the start of the game in increments of a quarter of a goal. And one of the reasons we use the Asian Handicap is because it's very liquid. But another is that the odds are normalised to, on average, evens each side. I mean, we're probably betting 198, 198, the best prices with the Asian bookmakers. And what that means is you're never going to get a situation where you make a, I don't know, a 3-1 shot, 6-4. So you're gonna have a lot more on the 3-1 shot. So a lot of time it's what we make our handicap, the supremacy that we make it compared to the actual handicap. So while we have a Kelly part of our stake, it's a very standard staking system because the returns are you've already got a standard return-based staking system. But you haven't even tried to make it like that, but just because it's an Asian handicap, you're always getting a binary payoff. We're very cautious in our staking plan. We average 0.7% of our bank. I think in terms of how anyone should work out their stake going forward, I think when you're learning to bet, and when you're new to it, I think it makes sense to have a higher staking system, even higher percent of your bank, because you don't necessarily have this physical betting bank. It's only when you start taking it very seriously, you've devoted a bit of money to your bank, and not much higher, but I can imagine 2 or 3% is going to be a good way to test the system, but also have it matter enough so you're going to give it enough attention when you're learning. When you take it to a professional level, you don't want any result to have a huge bearing on your annual results. So we have about 0.7% of our bank on every bet, but the reason we have such a low amount is that we place a lot of bets a year. So I think you still want to turn over a large enough percent of your bank to make a good return over a year. And if you don't do that, then the profit you're going to make is going to be very small, and maybe you don't give it enough attention because you don't have enough turnover.
Yep. So at, say, $1.98 for the Asian handicap, what would you expect to win as a winning strike rate or percentage of your bets?
Oh, I mean, the market's very good. if we won 55% of our bets in a year, we would kind of make a 1,000% return on our bank. It's not going to happen. I mean, a strike rate, we'd be looking at 52% strike rate against a market that's probably paying you out, yeah, so maybe a 49% market. So it's kind of like a 2% over round, and we try and make 52 or 53%, but a very small amount over that many bets. It's a good market, and it's a tough market to beat.
And then how do you manage your bank, whether you're winning or losing? Do you adjust the size of your bet?
Yeah, I think it's a good question of when you should adjust the size of your bank. I think it's good practice. If you've got a profitable system, then compounding the bank is going to make the returns better. I think in a perfect mathematical system, you would rebalance your bank every bet. That's not practical at all, I don't think, when you've got a lot of bets going on at the same time over a short period. And it would also mean that the most recent bet has a lot more influence on your bank than previous bets if you're on a good run. So the way that we do it, we rebase our bank every quarter. On average, that'll be about every 750 bets, and maybe five times we turn over our bank five times. I think you want to do it at least every time, as a maximum, every time you turn over your bank. So every time, if you've got a bank of $10,000, when you place $10,000 in bets, have a look at what you've got in your bank and then rebase that for your standard stake. But I wouldn't do anything less than one full turnover of your bank, and we do it around five.
All right, we'll leave it there for today, Will. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's definitely a different perspective to what we've had before. All the best. Also, I believe you're speaking at the Matchbook Traders Conference.
Yeah, we are. It should be a great event. If you've got any of your listeners that are over in the UK, I'm in London on the 14th, it'd be great to come and join us. And we're hoping it's going to be live streamed. And yeah, it's a really good really good list of speakers. So should be a great day, and hoping Scott can make his dream work.
No worries, Will, all the best. Appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.